Imagine a single rock, right, floating out in space. It's maybe no bigger than a small city, but it holds more precious metals than we've ever mined here on Earth. Sounds like something straight out of science fiction, doesn't it? Well, what if I told you that vision? It's quickly becoming a very real and incredibly complex frontier. Today, we're taking a deep dive into asteroid mining. That's the hypothetical, but, you know, increasingly plausible idea of extracting materials from asteroids and other minor planets. Our mission today is to unpack all of it, not just the huge potential, but also the surprising tech hurdles, the fascinating economics, those tricky legal questions, and critically, the environmental side effects that often get overlooked when we talk about chasing these cosmic riches. We'll explore what it really means for us, for humanity, to reach out and start using resources beyond Earth.
And the sources we're drawing on for this are, well, they're really quite something. It's a rich tapestry. We're looking at everything from early academic ideas and classic sci-fi. All the way through to current government reports, company announcements that are happening right now, and these really crucial debates around international space law, environmental impacts, that sort of thing. It's fascinating to see how the whole field has evolved and how it keeps challenging our assumptions about what's actually possible.
So get ready to have your mind expanded a bit. This deep dive is all about giving you that shortcut, getting you properly informed on a topic that might just shape the next 100 years. Okay, let's unpack this then. Why are we even talking about mining rocks in space? I mean, we're still digging stuff up here on Earth, right?
That really is the fundamental question, isn't it? And if you step back, look at the big picture. Earth's formation is key. Billions of years ago, when the Earth was molten, its strong gravity pulled most of the heavy iron-loving elements, things like gold, platinum, cobalt, deep down into the core.
Okay, so they're locked away down there.
Pretty much. So the metals we actually use today, the ones accessible in the crust, a huge amount of that actually arrived later, delivered by asteroid impacts. So in a very real sense, asteroids have already done some mining for us, dropping off these riches right on our doorstep.
Never thought of it that way. Cosmic gifts.
Exactly. Now, sure, some elements do seep up from the deeper layers, creating incredibly rich deposits like the Bushveld Complex in South Africa that's a massive source of platinum metals. But for many critical elements, those asteroid impacts were absolutely vital for seeding the crust.
Okay, so these aren't just any old space rocks. They're like cosmic treasure chests. What kind of riches are we actually talking about, and why are they so important?
Well, we're talking about a potential fortune in metals that are, you know, essential for our economy, for our technology.
Right.
Gold, platinum, sure. But also things like cobalt, nickel, ruthenium, tungsten, palladium. The whole suite of critical elements.
Things we need for electronics, green energy.
Precisely. Everything from advanced chips to batteries to catalysts for clean energy. And it's not just metals, which is a really crucial point. Water ice is a huge one.
Water? Like for drinking?
Well, yes. Eventually, perhaps. But the big value is in situ resource utilization, or ISRU. Certain asteroids, like the binary Trojan 617 Patroclus, or maybe some comets, they could hold vast amounts of water ice. And you can process that ice into rocket propellant right there in space.
Ah, so you don't have to launch heavy water tanks from Earth.
Exactly. It dramatically cuts the cost of deep space missions. You could refuel ships, maybe even supply water for future space habitats.
Yeah.
And looking beyond water, you've got C-type asteroids. They offer things like organic carbon, phosphorus.
Like fertilizer components.
Yeah, potentially key ingredients for growing food in space someday.
Millions of years of supply from just one rock. That's genuinely mind-boggling. Can you give us a sense of the scale here, like the actual dollar value, maybe?
The numbers get pretty wild, honestly. Take a relatively small metallic asteroid, maybe 1.6 kilometers across. Estimates suggest it could hold over $20 trillion U.S. dollars worth of metals.
$20 trillion with T.
With a T. Or look at a smaller one, maybe a 10-meter S-type asteroid that might have something like 650,000 kilos of metal, including maybe 50 kilos of rare stuff like platinum and gold. And then you have M-type asteroids, which are even richer, maybe 10 times more metal than S-types.
Wow.
Yeah, like the famous asteroid 16 Psyche. It's about a kilometer across M-type, and estimates suggest it holds, well, something like 1.7 times 10 to the power of 19 kilograms of nickel iron.
I can't even picture that number.
It's enough nickel iron to meet global demand for millions of years, plus significant amounts of precious metals on top of that.
Billions of years.
And AstRank, which is a database that tries to estimate this stuff, figures there are around 700 known asteroids out there, each worth potentially over $100 trillion U.S. dollars.
Okay. Okay, so these aren't just rocks, they're cosmic vaults, like you said. But that brings us back to the big question. If the payoff is so immense, why aren't fleets of mining ships already out there? What's stopping us?
Exactly. The challenges are just as huge as the potential rewards.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, just look at the current tech limitations. Think about sample return missions. We've had a few, right? Japan's Hayabusa.
Yeah.
It brought back less than 100 milligrams.
Tiny.
Barely anything. Hayabusa 2 did a bit better, 5.4 grams. And NASA's OSIRIS-REx, a fantastic mission, cost over $1 billion.
A billion? For how much?
About 121.6 grams, so roughly a cup of material.
Wow. So you spend billions to get back something you could, like, lose down the back of the sofa.
Huh. Pretty much. It just shows how incredibly expensive spaceflight still is and how hard it is to even identify, get to, and then reliably access asteroids that might be worth mining.
That really puts the micromining, yeah. Okay, so getting there and back with a tiny sample is tough enough. What about the actual mining process in space? That sounds alien.
It's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah.
Microgravity is a massive issue. How do you drill? How do you crush rock? How do you process ore when everything just floats away?
Right, no gravity to hold things down.
And any kind of digging or drilling could kick up huge clouds of dust.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't like Earth dust we saw with the Apollo missions on the Moongard. Lunar dust is incredibly abrasive. It's sticky. It gets into everything. Seals, joints, electronics.
A nightmare for equipment.
Absolutely. And then how do you even anchor your multi-con mining rig to an asteroid?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's spinning or if it's not solid rock, but more like a loose pile of rubble held together by weak gravity.
Right. You can't just drop an anchor.
People have looked at things like harpoons, but the asteroid needs to be solid enough, penetrable enough.
Yeah.
It's a huge challenge.
That's not like you can just radio back to Houston if your, I don't know, your dust filter clogs up or your harpoon bounces off. That communication delay,
it's long.
Yeah.
Exactly. Multi-minute delays each way. So quick back and forth with ground control for troubleshooting, forget it.
Which means you either need incredibly sophisticated, totally autonomous robots that can fix themselves.
Which is a massive technological leap in itself.
Or you need people up there, constantly on site, ready to deal with problems as they happen, which sounds even more complex and expensive.
It's a critical dilemma, yeah.
Yeah.
The answer is probably both. You'll need highly automated systems for the routine stuff, but for complex tasks, for troubleshooting. Having humans there dramatically increases your chances of success. But of course, putting people there adds layers and layers of cost, life support, safety concerns. And this all ties back into the orbital economics, the bigger picture. We talk about delta V.
Right, the change in velocity. Basically, your fuel budget for moving around in space.
Exactly. It dictates how much propellant you burn versus how much valuable material you can actually bring back. It's all about efficiency. And this is why a certain category of asteroids called easily recoverable objects, or EROs, are so interesting. Yeah, identified back in 2013, they're a class of near-Earth asteroids, some quite small, maybe just 2 to 20 meters across. The key thing is they have very low delta V requirements to reach and potentially move. So the idea is maybe with current or near-future tech, we could actually nudge one of these into an orbit closer to Earth, making it much easier to access.
Ah, bring the mountain to Muhammad, kind of.
Sort of, yeah. Makes the logistics much more manageable.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me. Because this whole idea, mining asteroids, it isn't some brand new concept cooked up last year, is it? It actually has this surprisingly long history, often starting in sci-fi.
Oh, absolutely. For decades, it was purely the stuff of science fiction. You can find early hints way back in Garrett P. Service's Edison's Conquest of Mars in 1898.
Wow, 1898.
Yeah. And then later works like Scavengers in Space. It captured the imagination, mm-hmm. but serious academic interest didn't really kick off until after Apollo 11, after you'd actually been to another world in 1969. Initially, scientists looked at asteroid groups relatively close to Earth, like the Apollo and Amor groups. Makes sense, right? Lower delta V.
Well, for the low-hanging fruit first.
Exactly. Then, by the late 80s, the focus even shifted towards Mars moons, Phobos, and Deimos as potential staging points or resource depots. And around this time, places like NASA really started thinking seriously about how you'd actually process materials in space, partly driven by that growing awareness that, you know, Earth's resources aren't infinite.
And then came the 2010s. That felt like a real flurry of activity, almost a bubble, maybe. We had planetary resources pop up in 2012, backed by big names, billionaires like James Cameron, Larry Page. Their goal was ambitious, creating fuel depots in space from asteroid water. And then Deep Space Industries followed in 2013 with similar plans, huge buzz around them. What did we learn from that era? Did they just fizzle out?
Well, fizzle out might be a bit harsh, but yeah, they didn't achieve their ultimate mining goals. Planetary Resources developed some cool tech, like their Arcad telescopes, but eventually pivoted, and its assets were acquired. Deep Space Industries also pivoted to selling propulsion systems before being acquired. But what's fascinating, the key lesson maybe, is how even though they didn't strike space gold, these ventures were crucial. They pushed the boundaries, forced innovation, they advanced essential technologies, small satellite systems, propulsion, autonomous navigation, things the entire space industry benefits from now.
So even in failure, they laid groundwork.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They highlighted the immense technical and financial hurdles, but they also moved the needle forward. It's a classic pattern in pioneering industries. And now, in the 2020s, we're seeing a definite resurgence.
Yeah.
We've got renewed interest from the U.S., from Europe, China. A big part of that, honestly, is SpaceX. Their reusable rockets have drastically lowered the cost of just getting stuff to space. That changes the whole economic equation.
Right. Launch costs were always a killer.
Exactly. And you even had a U.S. congressional committee hold a specific hearing on asteroid mining just last December in 2023. Though, interestingly, there's also this emerging culture of secrecy around some of the private companies involved now, which adds another layer of intrigue, maybe.
A culture of secrecy, huh? That sounds like something out of a spy novel. Does that make it harder to track what's really going on? The actual progress versus the hype?
And speaking of economics,
yeah.
What does this all mean globally? Could flooding the market with, say, platinum from an asteroid actually break the market, make the whole venture worthless?
The secrecy definitely makes transparency tricky, yeah. Fuels speculation, maybe skepticism too.
Yeah.
And the market impact, that's a huge concern for economists. It's this kind of inverse Malthusian problem. Not too few resources, but potentially too many, arriving too quickly.
Right, if platinum suddenly becomes as common as aluminum, the price could plummet, yeah. And if your whole business model relies on high prices for rare metals, that could absolutely doom the venture. It's a real paradox. But stepping back again, the impact of rockets like the SpaceX Falcon Heavy can't be overstated here. Its operational use has fundamentally shifted the accessibility landscape. We've gone from maybe a few hundred economically reachable near-Earth asteroids to potentially thousands.
Thousands.
Yeah, accessibility jumped from maybe 3% of potential targets to closer to 45%. That dramatically improves the odds of finding something valuable and reachable, making the whole profitability picture look quite different.
Changes the game.
It really does. And then there's this other idea. Using Mars, maybe it's Moon Phobos, as a forward base.
Closer to the main asteroid belt.
Exactly. Less Delta V needed to get out there and back compared to Earth.
Yeah.
It could support mining operations and help with potential Mars colonization efforts. People have even talked about using Phobos as a kind of anchor point for a Mars base elevator someday.
Wow. Okay. Phobos as a space elevator base. Mind blown again. But with all these trillions potentially floating around and multiple countries and companies eyeing the prize, it sounds like a recipe for conflict. A new Wild West in space. Who actually owns these rocks? What are the rules? Is there even a sheriff?
Ah, the legal frontier. It's still being mapped out, you could say. There is an existing framework stemming from the UN Office for Outer Space Affairs, international treaties, national laws. The big one is the Outer Space Treaty from 1967. It lays down some fundamental principles. Space is the province of mankind. Freedom of exploration and use, activity should benefit all mankind.
Sounds good. Very idealistic.
It is. And crucially, it allows countries and companies to extract resources and own them once extracted. So you can mine the asteroid, take the materials, and sell them.
Okay.
But it explicitly prohibits any nation from claiming sovereignty over celestial bodies. You can't plant a flag and say, this asteroid is mine.
Ah, so you could own the stuff you dig up, but not the land itself.
Precisely. And that raises a really important question, doesn't it? If multiple entities want to mine the same asteroid, how do you manage that without property rights? How do you prevent conflicts? The treaty is kind of silent on the practicalities.
Yeah, that sounds like a potential minefield. Pardon the pun. Was that what the Moon Agreement tried to fix back in 1979? I remember that being controversial.
Exactly. The Moon Agreement took a much bolder and ultimately more contentious stance. It declared the moon and its resources the common heritage of mankind.
Common heritage? What does that actually mean?
It meant any exploitation would have to be governed by some kind of international regime. And crucially, the benefits, the resources, or the profits would have to be shared among all nations.
Ah, sharing the loot. I can see why some countries might not like that.
You guessed it. The major spacefaring nations, the U.S., Russia, China, they never signed or ratified it. That resource sharing requirement was seen as a major barrier to commercial development. Why invest billions if you have to give away the profits?
So the Moon Agreement is basically toothless.
Largely, yes. Because the key players aren't bound by it. And that vacuum has led to countries creating their own national laws. Luxembourg was a real trailblazer here. Back in 2016, they created a legal framework specifically for space mining, invested hundreds of millions, and became the first European country to explicitly say companies could own the resources they extract in space.
Setting their own rules.
Pretty much. And the U.S. did something similar with the Space Act in 2015. It grants U.S. citizens the right to own and sell space resources they obtain.
And didn't President Trump issue an executive order reinforcing that?
He did in 2020. It explicitly stated the U.S. doesn't view space as a global commons in the way the Moon Agreement envisioned and directly opposed that treaty. So you have these diverging national approaches.
A real patchwork.
Yeah. And this lack of universal agreement, it also brings up safety concerns. Carl Sagan, the astrophysicist Stephen Ostrow, they warned about this decades ago.
Warned about what specifically?
About altering asteroid orbits. While nudging an ERO closer might be great for mining, messing with asteroid trajectories near Earth, well, it inherently carries collision risks.
Right. You nudge it a bit too much or miscalculate.
Exactly. That's a fine line between enabling this amazing future and, you know, accidentally creating an extinction-level event. It needs very careful management and international cooperation, which, as we've seen, isn't always easy to achieve.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly. We often hear asteroid mining sold as this, like, clean, green alternative, move the dirty industries off Earth, save the planet. Sounds great. But what are the actual environmental impacts? Both out there in space and maybe, surprisingly, back here on Earth. Are we just exporting our problems, maybe making them bigger?
It's a really critical ethical point. And yeah, the narrative is often overly simplistic. The promise is appealing, absolutely. Transferring heavy industry energy generation off planet, if done right, the benefits could be huge, especially if you're bringing back lots of material compared to the mass you launched. But the perils, they are significant and often glossed over.
Like what are the big risks?
Well, for starters, space debris. The mining operations themselves, drilling, blasting, processing, are expected to create a lot of dust and fragments. We already talked about the issues lunar dust caused for Apollo. It's abrasive, gets everywhere. Now imagine that on an industrial scale around an asteroid.
Creating clouds of space junk.
Potentially, yes. That debris, plus maybe bits of broken equipment, could seriously worsen the existing space debris problem. We're already tracking over 36,000 objects bigger than 10 centimeters up there, according to the ESA. Adding more junk increases the risk of Kessler syndrome.
Right, the cascading collisions idea, where debris hits satellites, creating more debris until orbits become unusable. Scary thought.
It really is. And then there's the contamination issue.
Contaminating the asteroids themselves.
Exactly. There's the risk of spills, accidents. Think about the long-term damage from mine tailings or chemical spills here on Earth. Are we just going to replicate that in space? Plus, many of these asteroids are scientifically priceless. They're pristine remnants from the solar system's birth. Studying them tells us about our own origins.
So crashing equipment or leaping fuel could ruin them for science.
It could irreversibly alter their chemistry or composition, yeah. There are planetary protection guidelines from COSPAR meant to prevent harmful contamination. But enforcing those with dozens of commercial mining operations, that's going to be incredibly difficult.
And if you think about the terrible legacy of, say, rare earth mining on Earth, the radioactive waste, the health problems, are we just creating environmental sacrifice zones in space instead?
That's the profound ethical question, isn't it? Are we learning from our mistakes or just finding new places to make them? And the mining techniques themselves, they raise concerns. Things like pneumatic excavation, basically using gas jets to dig, it's energy intensive, kicks up tons of debris. Thermal or chemical extraction also needs lots of energy, could create harmful byproducts. Electrostatic methods, big power demands. These aren't gentle processes. They could permanently scar these small worlds, changing their geology, maybe even affecting their potential for future human habitats, limiting science.
And unlike Earth, where erosion and weather can slowly heal landscapes.
Changes on an asteroid, in vacuum, with no atmosphere, they'd be effectively permanent. Scars lasting billions of years.
Okay, that's heavy stuff. But you mentioned impacts here on Earth, too. How does mining way out there affect us down here?
Right, here's the kicker, the one people often miss. Rocket launches.
Ah, the getting there and back part.
Exactly. Every single launch required to build, fuel, and operate these mining ventures releases pollutants. Things like black carbon, soot, water vapor, nitrogen oxides. And they release them high up, often directly into the stratosphere.
Where they stick around longer.
much longer than pollution lower down. And up there, they mess with atmospheric chemistry. Black carbon absorbs heat. Water vapor acts as a greenhouse gas. Nitrogen oxides deplete the ozone layer. It all contributes to radiative forcing, altering Earth's energy balance, trapping heat. It's a direct link to climate change.
So more space activity, potentially more climate impact here on Earth.
It's a definite trade-off that needs to be factored in. The scale might be small now, but if asteroid mining really takes off, the cumulative impact of launches could become significant.
Man. Okay, so huge challenges, serious environmental questions. But despite all that, you said progress is being made. Nations, companies, they're building the foundations, the stepping stones needed for this future. What do those look like?
Well, a key aspect is just demonstrating the core capabilities, right?
Yeah.
Proving you can do the fundamental things in deep space. Can you fly by an asteroid? Can you orbit one? Can you land? Can you drive a rover around? And critically, can you bring a sample back?
Checking off the boxes.
Exactly. And we've seen some incredible firsts. Japan's Hayabusa was huge, the first ever asteroid sample return. NASA's OSIRIS-REx, which just got its sample back in September 2023, was another landmark mission. And China's Tianwen-2 is out there now, aiming for a sample return around 2027.
So we are learning how to do these incredibly complex things, even if the samples are small for now.
Absolutely. Missions, even though they cost billions for grams of material, are invaluable precursors. They teach us how to operate, navigate, interact with these bodies. And looking ahead, you've got things like NASA's NEO Surveyor mission planned for 2028. It's an infrared space telescope designed specifically to find and catalog potentially hazardous and potentially resource-rich near-Earth objects. And initiatives like the B612 Foundation's ATOM platform aim to make asteroid orbit data more accessible, helping everyone understand the neighborhood better.
So better maps, better reconnaissance, laying the groundwork.
Precisely. Building the knowledge base and the technological toolkit piece by piece.
Okay, so let's try and wrap our heads around this. What does it all mean? We've gone from sci-fi dreams to this incredibly complex, challenging, often contradictory reality of asteroid mining. It holds this promise of almost limitless resources, maybe transforming our economy, but the costs, the risks, the unknowns, they're immense.
They really are. And if we connect it all back to that bigger picture, those environmental risks we talked about, they are just abstract concerns out there. Orbital debris affects our ability to use space. Contaminating pristine asteroids impacts our understanding of the cosmos. And those rocket emissions, they directly impact our climate here on Earth. So it forces us to ask that really important question. Are we actually solving our problems by going to space? Or are we just exporting them, maybe even magnifying them on a solar system scale? What does sustainable resource extraction even mean when your activities stretch across planets and potentially affect future generations in ways we can barely predict?
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely something profound to chew on as we keep looking up at the stars, thinking about our future out there. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive today. Lots to think about.